the meeting to order, the Metropolitan, well, I stole it a few years ago, like 20. The TPO, or C, TPO. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Gilliland.
Here.
Councilmember Hickey Peters.
Present.
Vice Mayor Matusik.
Here.
Mayor Misarzic.
Here.
Councilman Conroy.
Yep.
Commissioner Curry is excused. Commissioner McGurk.
Here.
Councilmember Saylor.
Here.
Commissioner Sowers.
Here.
Councilmember DiLorenzo. Councilmember Ford.
Here.
Councilwoman Long.
Here.
Commissioner Rebels.
Here.
Councilmember Patterson.
Here.
Councilmember Denny's.
Here.
Councilmember Cusack.
Here.
Councilmember Lowry. Councilmember Wagner. Mayor Emmett is excused. Vice Mayor Rogers. Councilmember Wheeler.
Here.
Commissioner Shute.
Here.
Mayor Gibson.
Here.
Mayor Sal.
Here.
Councilmember Perone.
Here.
Linda Costello is excused. Fran Antilier.
Here.
Judy Craig. Dustin Savage.
Here.
We have a quorum, and Councilmember Wheeler, for each person, is the voting member for small city elections.
Okay, thank you very much. Please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. Before we do that, I would ask a moment of silence. I don't know how many of you knew that last week, Dennis McGee, the former airport director, passed away. Dennis was a good friend of mine. I've known him since 1992, when the whole new structure of the airport was changed, and he was instrumental in that. Brought us international status along with Congressman Micah, created the airport ambassador program, the free trade zone for the airport. There was a lot. He started out, you know, down there, digging the ditches at the airport, but down there after he graduated from Embry-Riddle and rose to be our airport director in 1985. So if I could ask just for a moment of silence for Dennis and his family. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I always give this. I think
somebody. Staff does that to us. I think we're.
Give me a thrill when I sit down. Give me a thrill when I sit down.
Reminds me of a cartoon.
Yeah, I think so. I had a comment made to me that it looks, they say I look like I'm asleep up here. These lights cause me to squint. In fact, that's why those lights aren't. So if I'm squinting, I am listening. It's just my own little personal disability that I have that is caught up with me in my aging years. So, I'm not asleep up here. So don't think you can get up and leave. do we have any public comment? Mr. John, did you fill out a request?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Big John, 120 State Avenue on the Hill. Mr. Chair, I've never said at this meeting anything about you sleeping during a meeting or to County Council. Maybe on the radio, but never to your face. I have a couple of items for Big Gene of the FDOT. Mason Avenue was torn up on 9/30, about almost exactly a month ago. They just started fixing it yesterday, maybe. If I could get a report on that, I do not know the number of the road, Big Gene, so that's the best I could do. That's Mulberry to the bridge. So they took a whole bunch of asphalt off the road, so you bump, and then you bump when you go back up on the bridge. And it just seems to me the contractor goes there, tears up the road, and leaves for 1 month. I do not understand that kind of work. So I get a report on that, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it. For Big Gene, FM 436915-1. Is Brentwood to Sunset Lane, 3 miles. He was going to get me information on it, but unfortunately he had one of the young ladies over there that really doesn't know anything about anything, and she brought back false information. So I scurried over to Lois to try to get things straightened out, and as she always does, We found a top secret project that's going on that none of you know about that the FDOT is doing without your permission. That is a secret expansion of Nova Road from ISB to Bevel with a service road on it. So I'd like a report on that and where they're going to put the service road. And then for Robbie, there are no circles on the 2040 plan. There are no circles on the ISB master plan. And it's hard to follow the circle story when it's not in either one of those two reports.
Hey,
thank
Lois.
You.
Actually, Lois, could you give him a copy of the priority list that has the roundabouts on it, please?
No, priority list is not the long-range plan, and priority list is not the master plan, ISB master plan. No. If we're doing this huge, if Miriam's getting paid $300,000 or $400,000 to do an ISB master plan, you would think the circles would be on there. At least she did the circles too, right?
No.
Miriam did the circles for $55,000 extra. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Big Gene.
Okay. Next up, item Roman numeral 4, consent agenda. Is there any item on the consent agenda that the members would like pulled off for discussion?
Motion to approve the consent agenda. Gilliland.
We have
second.
A motion.
Second.
It has been seconded. Is there any discussion, any debate? Without objection, motion passes unanimously. Moving up to Roman numeral 5A, action item, review and approval of resolution 2015-2020 identifying US 1792 as the preferred alternative connection for the coast-to-coast trail between Seminole and Volusia County. Lois, do you want to report on that?
Yes, thank you very much. Good morning, everybody. This item really was presented to the board by Frank O'Day back in August, where the DOT was considering a variety of options for closing the gap between Volusia and Seminole County on the coast-to-coast trail, and members of this board discussed the different options that were presented, and the direction at that point was a preference for a 10-foot-wide barrier-separated trail along US 1792 as the permanent solution. And this particular resolution just formalizes that direction and position for the TPO.
Any questions? Commissioner Matusik, you have a question?
Yeah. Lois, have they decided what side that this is going on? I didn't see that in here. And my concern is Seminole's Trail is going to come down on the north side. And if this is on the west side, then how are they going to connect over on the other side? So
the north side or the west side? I know it's tough when something's running diagonally.
Yeah.
It's going to be on the I-4 river side or
got
I-4
it.
Bridge side. The I don't know, the south side, the side that connects to Lake
side.
Monroe Park.
Yeah, got it. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Move to approve resolution.
Second.
We have a motion to approve the resolution 2015-20. Identifying US 1792 as the preferred alternative connection for the coast-to-coast trail between Seminole and Volusia County. Any debate? Any debate? Is there any objection to the motion? Without objection, show the motion passes unanimously. Item B, review and approval of resolution 2015-2021, amending the fiscal year 2015-16 and 2019-20 Transportation Improvement Program, which is our TIP. Lois, you want to bring us up today?
The Transportation Improvement Program had a couple of corrections and additions that needed to be made. Correction to the Old Kings Road Extension Project, just changing what was identified as construction funding to right-of-way funding, which is the correct phase that should be in there, and then changing the funding source from county incentive grant to small county outreach. So that's just a correction. And then there were three different transit programs that needed to be added with current year funding. And so that's what this TIP amendment does, is just make sure that Votran and Flagler County Transit can access the transit dollars that are available, and it corrects the Old King Road Extension Project.
Move approval.
We have a motion to approve the
second.
And a second. So a motion to approve the resolution 2015-21, amending the fiscal year 2015-16, 2019-20 Transportation Improvement Program. Is there any debate on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Without objection, show the motion passes unanimously. Action item C, review and approval of resolution 2015-22, supporting a paved path along US 17 from Washington Avenue to the Pearson Seville Elementary School. Lois?
Yeah, this particular project is a request from the town of Pearson to add a trail that would connect from Washington Avenue up to a new school that's going to be built by Volusia County Schools. That school is able to be built because of the sales tax that has passed, and it looks like that's going to open in the year they're targeting August 2018. And that's a little faster than we're typically used to. So we have begun to proceed forward with the feasibility study for this. But this resolution is really supportive of the town and the Volusia County Schools in wanting to make sure that that project is fast-tracked if there's an opportunity to do that, which may involve funds outside of what typically flows through the TPO. So the town hasn't formally asked that we advance the construction yet on the priority list because it's just not at that point to even ask for construction dollars. But we're moving forward with the feasibility study in order to support accelerating that project. Likewise, there is a question at this point about whether it would be a sidewalk or a trail. And as we all know, if it's a trail, somebody has to agree to maintain it. And so the town of Pearson has been working with Volusia County to talk about what arrangements might exist. If it's a sidewalk, DOT will build it and maintain it. So again, no maintenance agreement exists, but we're still working forward with the feasibility study anyway to make sure that we know whether a trail is even possible and whether the right-of-way exists for that. But the bottom line is this resolution is supporting Volusia County Schools and the town of Pearson to try and make sure that we don't create a hazardous walk condition, that we recognize the schools moving forward, and that we want to try and get something in place sooner rather than later.
And if you vote against this, Mayor Sowell will never speak to you again. Mayor Masarsik, you have a question?
I just wanted to ask Mayor if you're anticipating your widening of 17 sometime in our lifetime, and so the trail will not be an impediment to the widening of 17. Here's one.
Is that a trick question?
He's been wanting that. I just wanted to make sure that he understood that when they plan it, make sure there's room for your widening project.
Well, you know, that reminds me of 15A. When they four-lane 15A around the land, they built the road, right, everything, built the sidewalks, and before they ever started the traffic, they had to tear the sidewalks up again to move the road. So things happen like that.
Thank you, Mayor. That's what I wanted to point out.
So it happens.
But I'll move approval if there's no other comment.
Second.
Councilmember, I'm having a moment.
Two sec.
I was thinking of somebody.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that this would be a wonderful addition to the city of Pearson, and in the partnership and collaboration with the Volusia County Schools, we're moving in the right direction. And if things change, as they will, we will deal with that when they come. So with that in mind, Mr. Chair, I would certainly second that motion.
Okay. Commissioner Lusick.
As we all know, there's talk to put a trail on 17 from DeLeon Springs up to 40, and the plan is to run it up to Putnam and connect with Putnam's trail. So I would certainly, you know, be support. I mean, they need a sidewalk or a trail. They need something there for the kids. But if there's any way, I would really like to look at that trail, because that'll be a piece that we're going to have to build anyway if that trail does come through. So I'd rather be proactive than having to tear it up and then try to get the right of way. So if it can be done, my preference would be to do the trail first.
I think the concern there is if there's right-of-way acquisition required, then that would delay the project, mm-hmm. and there wouldn't be anything opening. Mm-hmm. And again, there is the maintenance agreement that needs to occur. I just want to follow up as well. At the last meeting, Mayor Sowell asked about traffic operations and the plan for entering and exiting the school once it's open. And I can let you know that I did speak with staff from DOT as well as Volusia County Schools, and they haven't gotten to the point of developing that traffic circulation plan, turn lanes, signalization, or anything that is needed. But they are both aware that that has to occur and that that will occur as the site plan is refined.
Okay, any other questions? Any discussion, any debate? Any objection to the motion to approve Resolution 2015-22 supporting a paved path along US 17 from Washington Avenue to the Pearsonsville Elementary School? Without objection, show the motion passes unanimously. Roman numeral 6A, presentation status reports and discussion. Presentation discussion on the call for projects processes, project processes, and directing resolutions.
Thank you. Each year, the TPO reviews and updates the policies and the process that guide the development of our priority lists. And, of course, the priority lists are important because that's what we submit to the Department of Transportation as they build the work program. So this is the mechanism that projects get funded. So we do this work through a TIP subcommittee, and the subcommittee has met on several occasions now, and we've talked about the process and some potential changes, and I want to go ahead and discuss those briefly and get some direction and feedback from you all so that we can move forward with finalizing the documents and the details of this. There are really some issues that apply this year that have the potential to really change the program. One of those issues is the fact that we are proceeding with completing the long-range plan. And in the long-range plan, we set aside some money that typically would flow to road projects for other types of improvements that we call local initiatives. Those might be bicycle and pedestrian. They might be complete streets, roundabout projects, which are traffic operations projects, and those sorts of things, ITS projects, which creates potentially a new category. But we already have 9 different lists, so we're not particularly interested. I think DOT would discourage us from creating yet a new category. The department has also been working on a sidewalk gaps project, identifying gaps on state roads, and they're interested in starting to close those gaps and make sure that we have a safer system. But our previous process for identifying bike ped projects really kind of excluded state road projects because we were just using our TMA money, the money that comes to an MPO. And so we want to try and change the program so that we can identify true bike ped priorities, whether they are on the state road system or off the state road system. If it's a priority in your community, we need to make sure that we have it on a list, and we're asking DOT to put funding towards it. There were also some changes that occurred under Transportation Authorization Bill, MAP 21. And so that's changed the funding a little bit. We want to be responsive to that. So that brings me to the first recommendation. And the first recommendation is to consolidate some of our lists. More specifically, we have a separate list for road projects and for bridge projects. Well, funding under MAP 21 did away with a separate bridge program. And bridge programs are now a part of either SCP funding, surface transportation, or NHPP funding. The bottom line is there isn't a separate program. So the recommendation is to put road projects and bridge projects, major capital and capacity projects, on a single list. That's pretty simple. The strategic intermodal system would continue to remain its own list. Transit would continue to remain its own list. But then we get down to local initiatives, ITS traffic operations, and bicycle and pedestrian. And local initiative projects may lean towards being more bicycle and pedestrian oriented. They may lean towards being traffic operations, or they may be a combination of the two, if it's a complete streets project, for example. So the committee discussed this at great length, and the TIP subcommittee recommended combining all of those lists into a single project list that would be eligible for TMA funds. Those are the SU funds that can be used on or off system. They would be eligible for the state and federal funds that we said we wanted set aside for local initiatives. And the target amount would be $8 to $10 million a year. So yes, the list would be lower, but the amount of money available to fund those projects would be larger as well. The Bicycle and Pedestrian Project Review Committee preferred to keep bicycle and pedestrian projects separate. They wanted to combine the regional trails list and the bike ped funding through local initiatives, but they would like to keep it separate. Currently, when we review those lists and make recommendations, those are handled through different committees. The ITS traffic ops list goes through the TCC, the technical committee, and the citizens committee, and the bike ped list goes through the bike ped group. If we combine all of them into a single list, we go through both, all three groups. So that is the recommendation, really two separate recommendations. I've been looking for some feedback, concerns, thoughts that you might have on having two separate lists for these set-aside projects or combining it all into a single list. I can tell you when DOT goes to develop the work program, whether it's two lists or one list, they're looking at the funding options and they're making decisions. What this does, in my opinion, is gives us more clear direction through the MPO or TPO to be clear what our priorities are and not leave that decision making, no offense, to DOT when they're in a room scrambling for money and they're at project number five here, project number four here, which one is really next? If we have a single combined list, we're telling them which one comes next. It also creates the opportunity for funding projects at a higher level than we currently fund those projects. Because in those lists, in the past, we only have about $1.5 million a year if we separate them out. So we artificially limit the amount or the size of those projects. We know regional trail projects, as an example, can be several $1 million. So this creates some flexibility for DOT to program. It also creates some opportunity to have larger, bigger, bolder projects. Again, if we're talking about complete streets or a regional trail project, they do have the tendency to exceed those limits. So any initial thoughts or feedback on consolidation?
At the bicycle and pathway committee, what was the reason for separating it out?
I think because the nature of the projects are different and because the committee itself is making recommendations specifically. And it's cleaner and easier. It's not cleaner and easier for the department.
But the difference in the money, where are they going? How did they justify that by separating it?
Yeah, the subcommittee's rationale that hasn't gone to the full feedback yet was that they wanted to combine several priority lists, but they didn't want to take the additional steps at this time to combine the project applications, and they didn't want to change the local matches, because with the combined list, we have projects with different local matches. They want to take an interim step to just to combine just the bike ped project list and come out with the traffic ops list. They wanted to take that step to see how it would work, possibly come back next year and consider this again once that interim step was taken.
So, and to be fair to them and that conversation, this is a big change. This is a big change, potentially. And so they wanted to take it a little slower.
So is this pretty much going to be going on throughout the state, correct?
MPOs around the state are moving towards consolidating priority lists. I can tell you in a large area like Miami-Dade, they provide a single list because they're built out. They're not doing a lot of major capacity projects, so most of their projects are these set-aside types. So it's a lot easier in large areas. Also in very small rural areas like Lake Sumter, because they have very few projects on a list.
Mr. Ford?
Yeah, I would recommend we go to consolidation. Anything to simplify the process and make it more clear. I think more importantly is to make it clear, especially when there is competition. Yeah, it's important to make it clearer as well as to clarify position when we're talking about competing programs. So it makes very good sense.
Commissioner Matusik?
Was there any discussion on how they would be combined or who is going to decide on combining those lists where all three or four of those lists, projects that's number one on each list, won't be number one? I mean, we're not going to go number one, two, three, four. I mean, how is that going to be a process? Does it come back to us? And how long are you anticipating this taking?
That's really the million-dollar question. You're right. And when Commissioner Ford just spoke to simplifying, it simplifies and makes very clear our communication to DOT. The work that will have to go into this will be pretty significant. Combining the existing lists, again, we will continue to use a point scale ranking process. A lot of the criteria that go into this are consistent. It's connectivity, it's accessibility, it's safety. So we will have to work through meshing these lists. The section of projects which would be protected will have to be extended, which makes sense, again, because we are combining. We want to protect all the projects that are currently in that protected class. The time frame, we would be looking at bringing back applications and very specific action items at next month's meeting, because the call for projects starts at the beginning of the year. So we're going to tackle as much as we can between now and the November meetings, and then whatever we have to clean up in January, we'll clean up in January and be ready for the next call for projects.
Because some of the cities are already depending on those projects and have set aside, you know, money for them. So, you know, my concern is, if the cities are ready to go and now their project is going to be 2 years out, how does that, you know, really affect everything? So
there is nothing in this that is going to delay the advancement of a project. And again, the whole point in this is to be able to take advantage of funding that we're asking DOT to direct and to create that flexibility for them so that we can begin to advance projects.
Mayor Massarsi?
Yes, I understand it. Some of my question was asked. Mr. Ford brought a point. It's the competition. Is that the biggest fear factor? I mean, the fact is, take the bikes and combine it, which anything we can do to simplify this process, I'm all for. But there's other issues that we have with the point system and ranking projects and the call of projects. I think this, like you said, needs to all be done, because I have a list of other things that I know TCC I talked to. But there are projects going on, and there's some suggestions being made. And are you hopeful this could be done in time for the call for projects in January?
Yes.
Because some of that discussion that we've taken in our city, and I talked to city manager, and she's still here today about it, there's some revisions that these need to be done prior definitely think that needs to be done, and I'm all for the consolidation. There's going to be some pushback because of the two groups competing for the funds. That happens every day. And maybe by clarifying the point system on how you rank projects will bring these to a head. Shovel-ready projects, as Commissioner Matusik talked about, those projects should gain some sort of a priority so we can get them in the ground and get them built and move on. That's the goal here. So I'll make sure we have detailed information about the goals of CAC and DCC for that. But you're planning on getting that all accomplished prior to January's call?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Thank you, ma'am.
I'm not sure if my staff's very happy right now. Yes, yes, we are.
They're all smiling back there, but anyway, that's the hope.
Did anybody fall over?
No, they just grinned and kind of swayed a little, but they're okay.
And again, really there hasn't been a lot of concern expressed, with the exception of, let's just take it one step at a time, coming from the bicycle and pedestrian committee.
Commissioner Gillian?
Lois, could you run through the list again of what would get combined?
As far as road projects, we would just combine road and bridge projects, major capital and capacity projects. Those are the ones that are listed in the long-range plan. Then there is the set-asides that we do, that we have historically done with our SU dollars. ITS and traffic ops is one list. And safety projects. Then there is the new local initiatives that we've created, bicycle and pedestrian projects, regional trail projects.
And the last one as well?
Regional trail projects and transportation alternative. Excuse me.
That's the one that gives me a little indigestion, because it's a very odd and eclectic group of projects. For example, as Big brought up earlier, our East ISB roundabout stuff would end up on there with a bunch of trail projects. So I'm not quite convinced that combination makes a lot of sense, but I share the board's agreement that anything to simplify the process is good. I'm just I need to think about that a little bit, about whether or not combining those four makes sense.
Well, and again, I'll remind you that in doing that, we put all of the funding together, and it allows us to fund larger projects. The roundabout project exceeds any of the dollars that are available.
Yes.
You know, it's an intersection project technically, and so it falls on this traffic operations, and roundabouts are a part of the intersection improvement evaluation criteria that DOT is using now when they go back and assess intersections. So, you know, there's the potential for roundabout projects to be recommended as the preferred solution at intersections. So, again, they may end up on the ITS traffic ops list anyway. But what this does is create larger pot of money, potentially. And I would share with you, when it comes to transportation alternatives, when that money filters down to this TPO, we have less than $500,000 in TAP money. By combining that, at the very least, with the BikePed program, at least now it can be combined with other funds and actually get something done, because $400,000 for a transportation alternatives project is typically not that, you know, that's what funds a lot of the trail projects. And that program just isn't adequate for funding the trails, but it could supplement the BikePed set aside and actually build larger projects. Okay, so let me just move on to the second question, and we review this each time we go through this.
Lois, just one second. Councilmember Danish, you have a question before we move on?
I do. Can you hear me? Is my mic on? Can you hear me, Big? Are you okay? My question is to process here. I see members were trying to take notes on what you're telling us. Why weren't these recommendations sent to the TPO. I didn't see these until this morning, and my pink sheet was empty. So I guess what I'm asking, and I'm looking going forward, with the process that these recommendations will be presented to the CAC and TCC for review and recommended approval, and then brought back to us for review. Well, it appears at first blush they're going to have more information at hand, if you will, for review than we, the final authority and not an advisory council, will have. So I guess my question is, why are we scrambling to write things down, and why weren't the recommendations in writing to the board?
Well, my apology if I did not include them under the agenda item. All of the summaries of the TIP subcommittee meetings and their recommendations, as well as the technical committee, citizens committee, and bike ped review committee, are all in the agenda under the meeting summaries. But so their recommendations are in there. But those meetings, they weren't summarized under the agenda
item
itself.
Exactly. This board needs an executive summary of the bullet points. We shouldn't have to cross-reference each and every advisory committee meeting to pull out what was meant to come to a conclusion for recommendations. So I'm asking going forward that this board, we get a list of, and I'm asking you to forward this, even after the meeting, the staff could forward to the TPO, the list of recommendations and what's going to happen, because ultimately we're the ones to make the decision.
Well, absolutely, and again, that's the reason that we're discussing them, just to at least get some feedback before we start going any farther with this process. But I will definitely send a summary of the 3 points and the issues that we're discussing.
Thank you.
So that you can have that discussion with your staff.
Councilmember Cusack.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to find out exactly with the subcommittees, if we are going to combine and consolidate lists, will we have 2 subcommittees? Will they also be combined? Or what subcommittees will make the recommendations?
Yeah, going forward, there will be a single subcommittee. If we consolidate these lists, there will be a single subcommittee that will include representatives from all of our advisory committees, the BikePed, Technical, and Citizens Group. Right now, we have 2 subcommittees that review various lists. So we would combine those into a single subcommittee that would have representation from everything, every group. And then when the recommendations come through, the same recommendations that go through the technical and citizens group would go through the bicycle and pedestrian group. And you're right on point. There's a possibility that they have differing recommendations. But that's always been the case for our advisory committees. The citizens, the technical, and the bike ped they are very active, very engaged, and they do sometimes provide differing recommendations.
And will those... The combination of that committee, will the subcommittees have their own recommendation as to who they would want to be included in the larger committee?
Yes, they do. They appoint members, really and truly. Those groups are always open to anybody that wants to attend. But they do, for the purposes of establishing a committee and making a quorum, they appoint members.
And they would be a part of the voting group? That comes up?
They're really a working group, and then they provide recommendations to all the advisory committees, but they do the heavy lifting. They go in and they do the wordsmithing and the reviewing the applications, and then those go through the advisory committees, which eventually come to this board as recommendations from each of the 3 advisory committees that are established.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Matusik.
Back on the funding, if we didn't combine all of them and just pulled out the bike ped and the regional trail projects separately, how does that affect the funding for the bike ped and regional trail projects? I mean, money-wise, if we separated out, how much money are we talking about? If you combine it, you know, how does that help move it along? Because I'm really concerned about the bike ped projects and the trail projects we've worked so hard on. If we end up combining them, is that going to push back our timeline that we've been working so hard to bring forward?
if we kept the two set aside lists separate and we had traffic ops, ITS, safety, and then whatever sort of local initiatives that are related to those, and we kept the bike ped, transportation alternatives, regional trails, and bike ped local initiative projects, the money would be split in half. So instead of $8 to $10 million, it would be $4 to $5 million in each program. So obviously it would combining the list doesn't add to or take away funding. It just creates the opportunity for some flexibility. And it takes, when something is right on the fence, it takes the decision making out of DOT's hands and keeps it in the TPO's hands. There will be some question about projects, a complete streets project, for example. Does it go on the ITS or traffic operations list, or does it go on the bike ped list? And that's going to be up to the project sponsor and the emphasis of the project, whether it's dealing with bicycle and pedestrian issues or it's dealing with traffic operations issues. But there will be projects that are more of a melding of the two, and that will present some challenges. And we dealt with that at one point with the South Daytona bridge replacement project, because the bridge itself was a traffic bridge, a road, but it was being expanded to include bicycle and pedestrian features. And so there was a lot of deliberation here about what type of project this is. If those are separate, then we will get into that from time to time. They're merged, we don't, but yeah, the concerns that you've expressed, that it does. It creates a potential for some uncertainty about how this will shake out.
And the timeline, that's, my concern of the trail projects, too, because we could have a good trail project, and now instead of being on the top of the list, and it may only need $3 or $4 million, it goes on the regular list, and it can be down next year or the year before.
Well, and that's why I say, the devil will be in the details of making sure that existing lists, if you're in a protected category, you stay in the protected category, so you don't lose ground. There are more dollars, so the list is a longer list because it's a single instead of two, but the money is combined as well. So again, we shouldn't be losing any traction in terms of funding and advancing projects.
Well, this is a big decision to make without us just getting the information today on Deb's point. And I've got no way to go back to my staff and or talk to the county on the trails projects or what they what they seem to think as well. So I'm a little concerned that we're making a decision that
we're not making a decision today.
It says that they're asking for direction for the board because they have a meeting in November and they're going to meet before we meet.
Well, and as I mentioned, we can bring back items in November if we know the answers, and if we don't know the answers, we can come back in January. And we can continue the dialogue and get direction at November's meeting.
Yeah.
But the subcommittee will meet again, and the advisory committees will discuss this. There were no concerns at this point with moving forward, again, with the exception of combining all the lists or combining some of the lists. The point is to get it out there and to continue the dialogue, and to get thoughts about how to move that. But if you're not ready to provide some of those, then that's certainly fine.
Commissioner Stowers.
Thank you, Chairman. I echo some of the earlier comments about the lack of substance to this particular item, given the impacts of it. As far as combining the lists, I'll try to make a comparison, and you can tell me if this is accurate or inaccurate. With all due respect to bicycle, and pedestrian projects, I'll put them in the college football team category. And what we're telling them is that we're going to combine them with the NFL, the professionals, which are the infrastructure projects, which have as much money but higher potential being bigger money for bigger projects. But what we're, and that will in, in, prove efficiency and effectiveness because it's one NFL. But what we really know is that that college team is not going to be able to compete with the NFL team, and that first place project at a bicycle pedestrian college level will be a fifth place project at best in the bigger atmosphere of the NFL. Am I right on that? And if you can kind of follow through that logic, I just feel like we're setting them up, and I think the bike ped folks kind of understood that. We're saying effectiveness and efficiency, but we're setting up playing field where it's not the same. I mean, it's not an infrastructure project and a bicycle pedestrian project, again, with all due respect to the importance of it either, is apples and oranges. But what we're setting up is for it to be all treated the same.
Well, I don't know that I would agree with that. We're not talking about the major capital, the lane widening projects. We're talking about traffic signal installation, turn lane installation. And I think these are decisions that local governments make in priorities in their own jurisdictions all the time. If we're going to fund a project, are we going to fund adding a turn lane, or are we going to build that sidewalk? We do that artificially right now by setting aside target amounts. And what we're saying is, rather than setting aside target amounts, having set-asides, which, you know, have their own inherent issues, we're saying, let's take the money, all of the money that's available for those basically smaller, non-capacity-type projects that improve our existing system, and put them onto a single list and make it clear to DOT. I don't believe that a turn lane project or a addition of paved shoulders is going to inherently bump ahead of completing a sidewalk. The reality is, again, we're going to be looking at connectivity, access to transit, accessibility, safety, those same things that we look at now. And the projects generally are in the same price range currently. But again, we limit the ability to build a bigger, bolder project. But I couldn't tell you that a regional trail in an urban setting is going to rate lower than the installation of a mast arm. You know?
Okay, well, we've got more to come. And Lois will be getting the information out to all of us on this particular subject within the next few days. And we will watch this carefully because it is I think it's a pretty big decision that we will be undertaking here.
And just so I could be clear, the other two issues that are being discussed, so that we can make sure, and this will be a part of the email that I send in follow-up, are local match requirements. We revisit this every year just to make sure that we're clear on what the local match will be for local governments. And then the other item, because we have separate requirements right now, 10%, 20% on tap funds. So if we do some consolidation, we would want this to be a little more consistent. The other item is on project funding caps. Some of our programs have caps on the projects that are funded, and some do not, categories. So again, we'd be looking, hopefully, for some consistency. The program itself creates a bit of a cap because there's just only so much money available. But that is the other item that is being discussed. So I appreciate the feedback that I've received. I have heard you about the agenda, and I'll make sure that that information gets out a little more clearly in advance next time. And again, any feedback, please work with your staffs. And as we have our next subcommittee meeting, we'll continue to work through this.
Okay, let's move on. Item B, presentation discussion of the draft 2016 River to Sea TPO legislative positions. If you look at the little handy-dandy fold-out here, our committee met. We have two big issues. The transportation priority, which is funding, number one, and number two, transportation priority safety. And you can see on the back additional positions. We really wanted to kind of focus on one or two very important issues when you're badgering your state legislator or federal legislator, whatever it may be, but in this case the state, on what our priority, our number one and two priorities are. I think it's important. I've always felt that with my 10 years that I spent in the legislature, I had many cities coming with, not only locally, but outside of Volusia County, with 40 or 50 requests. And, you know, it's kind of hard. You need to really focus on what's really important and look at all the others. The Florida Association of Counties, the League of Cities have their issues. And many times we've just been pretty much parroting what their big issues were. And I think we need to really focus on what's important to us here, but at the same time maintaining what's important to the League of Cities and the Florida Association of Counties. Commissioner Matusik?
And I wasn't able to make the first meeting, but my concern has been and has been talked about is we had a perfect opportunity to state our legislative concerns to the Volusia delegation and hand them this, but we just seem to be, we wait too long in this process to meet with the legislative delegation. And this year's a little bit different because everything's going to be starting in January, but I think it's important to be able to address them with those concerns when they're getting all the information. So maybe next year and in coming years, we can start this legislative process, as I've asked before, sooner, so we're ready at the legislative delegation when we're meeting with people now, because as you know, it's very difficult come January when they're in Tallahassee. So I think to be more effective with our legislative delegation or our agenda items or positions, we need to do it sooner than later and work in the off court instead of trying to address it at Tallahassee.
Yeah, that's been one of my issues. And last year, Lois and I made a point of when we had our legislative issues, we were going and visiting the legislators one-on-one at their offices. And that's a lot of traveling, but it was really important at both the state Senate and the Florida House members. And this is something we'll be working on them as they come back between now and December when they go up there. I agree. We really need to start sooner. But, you know, one thing I learned from my years up there, and I know that Representative Cusack experienced also, nothing is static in Tallahassee, and it moves and changes. And what you see in legislation today will probably change within the next hour or so. So a lot of times people are, you know, what you have here by the time you get up there is already done and over with real quick. So we want to do that. So that is. So is there any other questions on that, on this? Why don't you tap me on the head or something?
Kick him under the desk.
Councilmember Dennis.
I can do that. Thank you so much. I'm going to take the first question, the easiest question first, and that's an item number two, a transportation priority. Under River to Sea TPO supports at the bottom, it just says omit entirely. Omit entirely what? Is there strike-through language? Is there language?
Subsection C.
Yeah, if you look just above that, you see B and C.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then what we say is that number, that item C.
Okay, so you're referencing the above. Okay.
Yes.
That's what I assumed, but I didn't know if there was just language there. We were going to omit entirely. Okay, and I think that's a really good change there. I like the language there. Here's my concern. This is a pretty aggressive legislative agenda. And here's my concern.
I'll take you with me when we go visit the legislators.
Oh, I wouldn't present it, very honestly. So, no, thank you. with all due respect, I don't know that I, for one, will approve. I just can't a 2 cent fuel tax increase per year for 5 years to a total of 10 cents. We've never had that discussion here. We've never had that discussion in these chambers in the board. Index of fuel taxes, conduct a vehicle miles traveled study. I don't know, but what I have heard out there politically and what this could be, I don't like where that one's going either. And increase the local diesel tax by 5 cents. These are some pretty strong statements. And before, I know this is a draft, but I'm just giving a heads up. I'm not going to support it. I just can't. I wouldn't go to our delegation and ask them to increase taxes to this degree for our citizens. And especially with all these caveats, I mean, it's not one, it's layered, this one, and if not that one, then raise it here, then raise it here. Then, well, if that won't work, then raise it here. This is a tough sell.
Yeah, and I could certainly spend some time, not that it'll change your position necessarily, but to at least help you understand what the background is. The Florida MPO Advisory Council is the statewide organization of MPOs. And they did a study in 2012 and came out with a series of recommendations. There's actually several other recommendations that have been provided, but these were the five items that this MPO in prior legislative packages agreed to move forward. These have been consistent. There was another revenue study that was done by the Florida Transportation Commission, which pretty much substantiated the issues that are here. And we have had several presentations, but to be honest, you know, they were back when the study was completed, and so it hasn't been in recent years. And so some of you that maybe have joined the board in the last few years probably haven't seen that particular presentation and study and what has happened with sales tax revenue, or excuse me, transportation revenues over time. But the bottom line is where we have very rigid revenue structure here in the state as inflation has eaten away and the revenues aren't supporting the existing system.
I understand that.
About how to change that.
The council, but the county, I understand that completely. But from 2012, I would venture to say, how much? I would say probably 80% minimum of the current TPO is new, if not higher, since 2012. This is just a tough sell, and not only that, I don't know our current delegation and the structure in Florida, if any of these would pass. I mean, it might look good here, and we might have committees that make these recommendations, but there's just no chance. There is just no chance this is going forward. It's just not. That's my opinion. Too much information, I'm sure. I apologize for that. But I won't support the funding initiative like this. Without further discussion and seeing where we want to go. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Ms. Gregg?
Yes. As a member of the Transportation Disadvantaged Board, the transportation priority funding, several places it talks about the trust fund for the transportation disadvantage. And there has been dollars removed from that and dollars not going into that fund. And it has reduced the amount of funding that they provide. And the transportation disadvantage means transportation for the gold buses. And as a person who used those buses many, many times and still do, I am very concerned. Medicaid was separated out. We do not take care of them through VOTRAN. And we need to protect those trust funds. I went up last March to Tallahassee and spoke to, I think, 50 people that I spoke to and told them that trust fund needs to be protected.
Thank you. Mr. Matusik?
And the five recommendations under the recommendations from the MPOAC, our issues to look at, it isn't saying go in and do the 5 cents on local diesel. It's not saying combine implementing 2 cents on fuel. I mean, it's getting the conversation going on things to look at to address the transportation needs, which we all know is an issue, not only at the state level, we're dealing with it at the county level. So unless these conversations are started and generated, it's not going to go anywhere, and I think it needs to be looked at it, you know, and addressed. And again, these are recommendations as options. It's not saying if you don't do one, do two. It's to start a conversation to figure out what we're going to do. Dock stamps was another issue. Money's been taken out of the dock stamps that was supposed to go to transportation. So, I see where you're coming from, but these conversations, we need to fix the transportation. And if these aren't, or if none of these are agreeable with the legislator, then what are they going to need to do to fix that? And it starts that conversation.
Okay. Any other discussion? Commissioner Gilligan?
Yeah. Maybe I'm confused, but this says to implement the recommendations, and two of them are taxes. One is a study, one is a formula change, and one is a shifting of funds between pots of money. So, I mean, it isn't. This recommendation is to implement all five of these. So, I'm with Deb. We've got a problem. We need to figure out how to fix it. But I don't know that I could support this the way that it's put together.
Councilmember Denny's.
One final comment. Again, this was not attached to the agenda. I don't believe. First time I saw it was this morning.
Mm-hmm. The Legislative Issues Committee met prior to this meeting.
Okay. All right, so now I need more notice than this, or information, or we withhold it to the next meeting. Then, if we don't have it for the TPO, for the advisory committee, if we don't have the supporting documents before we walk in, then it needs to be placed on the next agenda going forward.
And again, it will be on the next agenda. Here, it is for presentation and discussion. It's not for action.
Mr. Stowers. Oh, I'm sorry. Mayor
Massarzi. She really kind of answered the question. We need some more information on it because I see both points of view. At the top it says implementing, but then it does say options. I think we need to look at options. Transportation fund is drying up from the local level to the federal level. There's got to be options, but I agree with part of the other problem too. It does say implement. So, can we get a little more information about it before we
will do that. Commissioner Stowers.
Thank you. I'll again echo Councilmember Denny's comments about not having all the information because I can tell you it happened earlier here. There was a comment about an agenda item, and the response was, well, this was on a previous agenda, and there was no comment. So what happens is this starts to create a record by which we'll be questioned if we raise it next month. It'll be, well, you saw it last month and no one said anything. So I would just rather have all the information, as Councilmember Denny said, in one place, have the whole package. So not just this pink piece of paper, but at our next meeting with the pullout so that we know everything we're going to be discussing. And it's not this back and forth from a previous meeting when we had technically the information, but we didn't have time to prepare. So that's all I have.
Mr. Sawyer.
The 19th and 20th of November, the Water League of Cities Transportation Delegation is meeting. And the notes that I got when I look at this, there are two words, swapped in this compared to the notes I got for the meeting I'm going to in November. And that is implementing and recommendations. Recommendations implementing is the way it was written in the Florida League of Cities notes that I've gotten. So that kind of puts a different twist on it. So I'm kind of looking at it both ways here. You understand what I'm saying? I can see where it came to, it's going to be coming to us as a recommendation, not implemented.
Any other? Anybody else? Okay, Lois. We know what we need to do next. Okay, item C, presentation discussion of the State Road CRA A1A Pedestrian Safety and Mobility Study Preliminary Findings. Lois? Oh, yeah. Okay.
This is a pedestrian and safety mobility study that began in July. And we have Kittleson Associates working on this. They've been doing some field review. They've been doing some data collection. And they're going to just give you an update on where the project stands and where it's headed.
Good morning. I'm Adam Bergdorf with Kittleson & Associates. Really excited to be working on this project. And we're getting ready to actually go out in the field and start doing some field reviews. But let's quickly go over kind of some of the information that we've uncovered thus far. Real quick overview, if you guys don't remember the A1A study purpose, it's a 57-mile corridor, basically going from the southern tip of Volusia to the northern tip of Flagler County. Anything that's looking like A1A is included within there. The primary goal of which is to recommend some implementable being the key word, bicycle and safety improvements and countermeasures at some key locations along the corridor, and then expand that to achieve our secondary goal, which is to identify a matrix of countermeasures that can be applied proactively along the corridor so that we can improve pedestrian and bicycle safety. Quick overview of our schedule. As Lois mentioned, we started in July. We're now into October. Our stakeholder group met at the end of September. Very active Mayor Emmett was actually involved in the committee as well, and we're getting ready to start going out into the field to look at some specific areas, do pedestrian roadway safety audits, hoping to wrap up the end of March. But this schedule might be adjusted a little bit just because, for our stakeholder group meeting, we might be expanding a couple of areas that we're going to take a look at. So. You guys probably remember that there have been a few studies that the TPO has been involved in for involving A1A over the past several years. Our intent is to not recreate the wheel here, but we've collected the studies, we've reviewed them, we're understanding the content that they contain, and considering that as we move forward. Quick overview of the analysis that we've done thus far. We have retained a sub-consultant called Enforcement Engineering, Dr. Grady Carrick, a retired FHP commander who is now out doing his own consulting business. He helped us bring in, or gave us access to some new data that's pretty cutting edge. It actually is traffic citation data. And what we're able to do is obtain that information by municipality and analyze it and see what types of offenses are occurring so that we can hope to identify some near misses that the crash data doesn't give us access to. He's also served as a great liaison between every single law enforcement agency that has jurisdiction along the corridor in being able to talk to the chief as well as the actual police officer that is patrolling portions of A1A to help identify where areas of abnormal behavior occur and some of the issues that they're seeing since they're out on the road more than any of us along the way. He's getting good feedback from all of the police agencies, and they're looking forward to participating with us as we move forward. Some of the crash data that we've looked at thus far, we've gathered 6 years of data. Overall, there's 158 bicycle slash pedestrian related crashes along the corridor, several more crashes that might be vehicular only. Of the 158 crashes, we've actually prepared detailed diagrams of about 130 of them, so we understand what these crashes are. Quick overview of the stats. 14 fatalities along the corridor. 40% of the pedestrian and bicycle crashes that we're seeing are occurring at night, but 14% of them being alcohol and or drug related, and that 14% figure could either be the bicyclist or the pedestrian that could be intoxicated, or the vehicle operator. And that number actually we felt was a little lower than what we had expected, given the tourist type nature of the area. And then the last bullet point is about 38% of the bicyclists and pedestrians involved in the crashes are either under the age of 20 or above the age of 65, and that group we typically consider to be kind of at risk for bicycle and pedestrian in the bicycle and pedestrian environment. We took the crash data analysis, and we also cross-referenced it with a bunch of other factors, including annual average daily traffic along the segments, speed, where the crossings are, where the crossings are not, were they at night, were they during the day, and then also looked at some land use parameters, where are the beach parking lots on the other side of A1A that contribute to some crossings, what are the civic type land uses, could there be a community center or a theater of sorts along the way. We could cross-reference all of that and then went to the stakeholder group and with these nine different areas that we're recommending to be our preliminary focus areas. The nine focus areas that are presented right here, actually, you also have a larger printout of this in front of you. These nine focus areas contain about 3/4 of the total number of bicycle pedestrian crashes along the entire 57-mile corridor. If you were to string each one of these areas together, we have about 10 miles of areas that we're potentially going to look at out in the field, on the ground, in detail. We're currently scoped to look at 3 of these specific areas along the corridor, and then so we recommended these 3 areas, D, E, and G. D is on the Daytona-Ormond kind of line, and E being up just north of Ormond Beach, a little small piece of it is within Ormond Beach, with the majority of it's in Ormond by the sea. I actually have 3 fatalities. That 3 is actually about 4. There's one just a half a mile north. So there's a large concentration, 4 fatalities in Ormond by the sea out of the 14 total. And then Area G is in Flagler Beach, where we have some angle parking on one side of the street and parallel parking on the other, and kind of a free-for-all for pedestrian crossings. When we looked at the 3 areas, these 3 areas, we also noted that there are 2 areas that were really hard to separate from this list. There wasn't a clear reduction in crashes, between the 3 to 5. The stakeholder group was made aware of that, and they recommended potentially expanding to look at these 2 areas and maybe one more. So the area A being in New Smyrna Beach, actually the east-west portion known as 3rd Avenue out in front of the Publix where the little theater is. The area through Daytona Beach, which is north of ISB, to about University, which had the largest concentration of crashes along the entire corridor as well. And then Mayor Emmett was also recommending that we take a look at areas northern Flagler Beach and then into Beverly Beach as well. So the TPO is currently pursuing means of adding these 2 to 3 additional areas to the scope of the study, and that the addition of those areas could actually push our schedule, but that's actually for a good reason, to be able to take the lessons learned from those areas and then incorporate them within the study. Next steps, we'll be doing field reviews through the end of the year, and maybe into the beginning of the new year as we move forward. So with that, if there are any questions.
Any questions? Commissioner, Councilman Denny's?
Yes, if I could have the lights brought up so I could see my notes. Thank you so much. Just a question here. Looking at, went back to your slide, your previous study reviews that you looked at. The New Smyrna Beach study was done in 2012. Is that the data you used for this?
Excuse me.
Your slide. I guess mine says slide 6. Yes, previous studies review. Pedestrian study in New Smyrna Beach was 2012. Was that updated, or are you using data from 2012?
No, we're using current data. Some of the data that we are looking at does overlap with some of the data that was analyzed during that study. That study actually resulted in the implementation and construction of multiple pedestrian crossings south of the New Smyrna Beach, or sorry, south of the FDOT's limits at about 7th Avenue all the way to the southern New Smyrna Beach city limits.
Well, and that's my concern here, because there's some things that are in process and maybe not identified or even have made an impact, let alone a critical impact yet. And that's the county with off-beach parking, and certainly in the New Smyrna Beach area, the average daily traffic, I promise you, is increasing there. And when I looked at this, the thing that concerns me about the numbers is there's some indicators. Maybe there's not as many crashes in some of the areas because the reaction time is quicker. There's less under the influence of drugs and alcohol. But does it mean, in other words, I know that you're, sometimes we use data, but there's more to it than that. So I guess my concern is, especially in New Smyrna Beach, their traffic is unbelievable. And we need improved crosswalks. We need the facilities have got to be improved there. So I definitely want to see, from my point, that one moved up. And I don't think areas should be penalized for maybe there's not as many deaths or as many critical injuries because there's abnormal behavior versus increased usage. I would tell you, as far as increased usage, it's definitely down in Southeast Volusia, in that particular area. So I just want to go on the record with that and make sure that that's on this priority list. Thank you.
Commissioner Gillian.
Firstly, let me say that I'm glad to see you're looking at expanding to include two additional areas, and that area C in Daytona Beach, I mean, you've got 20, almost 25% of the total crashes in that area, and it didn't make the top three. That's a little surprising to me. But, you know, hopefully we will find a way to be able to expand this to include both the New Smyrna Beach area and the area C in Daytona Beach. But I do have one question. When your final report is produced, what exactly are you planning on including in that? Sort of a standardized, like the kind of some recommendations you think will apply to the entire corridor-specific recommendations, both? Are you going to do any prioritization about, you know, where we think we will get the most bang for our buck for, you know, dollars that are invested? Because, you know, ultimately, I think, you know, we're going to see some of these things show up on priority lists here. And, you know, it would help to have some outside influence on, you know, what we're, you know, a more neutral, you know, we're all vested in this with our communities, whether they be the municipality or our planning area. I'll go with the planning area because we're also open-minded, right? But I think that it would be beneficial to get some recommendation for where our limited dollars might be invested to gain the most benefit for, you know, the folks in our communities.
Yeah, so to answer your first questions about the deliverables, the focus areas that we actually perform the roadway safety audits on, will have its own standalone report. That report identifies immediate, short, kind of near-term, and then long-term countermeasures that can be implemented. Some of the immediates might be, you know, signal timings need to be replaced. That can be provided to the individual agencies. FDOT, having the majority of the jurisdiction along the way, uses these things to help program push-button projects and that type of thing. And then the overall report will incorporate those 3 to 5 different roadway safety audit reports. But It's also going to have what we're going to it's going to have a countermeasure matrix, and that matrix will be something that, you know, for example, there maybe there's a rectangular rapid flashing beacon that somebody wants, a municipality would like at a certain location. This is what you can get out of this. These are the benefits of this improvement. This is the general cost of this improvement. These are the steps needed to get approval for one of these improvements. And the idea is to put together a menu of various countermeasures that can be applied so that individual municipalities know what they can do to get one of these things built. And they can do that in a proactive manner so that you're not looking strictly at fatalities and injuries and crash data. And we will also be going to FDOT and then the counties as well to help to identify funding mechanisms to get these types of projects advanced. So does that answer your question about
the
deliverable?
Okay.
Any other questions? Oh, Commissioner Stowers.
Thank you, Chairman. First, I want to thank you for all this information in the blow-up. That's very helpful. My position on this can't come to a resolution or completion fast enough. It's long overdue. It's needed. The one comment I would make is if we could at some point include existing infrastructure that is in place at the various crosswalk areas. I know, for example, down in New Smyrna Beach, there's a blinking beacon down there somewhere, and we've in Ormond Beach in our area said, you know, we want that. I think ultimately, whether, you know, we can make the statistics do whatever we want, but one thing we can't do, I hope, is ignore the statistics. And, you know, having D&E in there, I think, is good given those fatalities. But really, having that consistency throughout that corridor, I think, is the ultimate goal, to where we see what's safe and then we implement that throughout, so we don't have this haphazard manner in which, you know, some crosswalks, because you get areas that are heavy residential, there may be less traffic, but if it's heavy residential with a lot of walking, those conflicts are actually, you know, because there's more of a balance, there's more opportunities for conflict. So, you know, again, I just wanted to kind of reiterate some of those points, and thank you.
Yeah, and those are the types of considerations that we are taking. And we also have noted that there are different styles, I guess you could say, in different forms throughout from one end of the corridor to the other. And I think part of this would be to help unify expectations along A1A so that you have similar treatments for the driver to expect as well.
Lois?
I just wanted to speak to Councilwoman Dennis's point as well. Every study, at least a lot of the studies that we do, have limitations, and in this case we have a limited amount of money, and therefore there is a limit to the number of areas. But I think we all recognize, and comments have already been provided, that we want to go past that. And we've already been in discussions with the Department of Transportation about what happens next once we get through. And so there is certainly no intention to penalize an area for not already having crash statistics. We certainly want to be proactive, which is what brings in some of the citation and the data and the working with law enforcement and working with local jurisdictions, because you're absolutely right. It doesn't always end up getting reflected in the crash data, because thank goodness people have quick reactions and want to protect themselves. But that doesn't mean that there isn't an issue in some areas just because the data's not there. So again, we want to certainly focus on the areas where we do have statistics that we can improve, and then move to the next phase, which is identifying areas where we have other issues and become more proactive so we don't end up with those statistics.
Councilman,
first of all, thank you, and thanks for the discussion. I think this is really good, and I do understand we have limited dollars for the studies. I get all that. But what if we, to Commissioner Stower's point, I think that's a great idea. Well, where's our existing infrastructure now? And what are we doing? And those blinkers, when we were looking in Daytona Beach at that entertainment zone back there with those hotels, and I drove from that whole area and looked. I drove with several different people at different times to look at crosswalks and to look at the issues for parking, you know, off-beach parking and oceanside parking. There was clear in some areas. There's no flashers. There's nothing. I mean, you're lucky if you get something painted on the road and for a pedestrian to see it, let alone for a driver to see it. But what if we come up with a template and those flashers, they work. We've got one, DeLand put one in over by the county admin building. You push the button and that thing just flashes. It's strong and you can see it. What if we just agreed that we want those installed in all of these crosswalks or most of the majority of these areas? That would probably help 1,000% because it gets the attention and it's a huge safety issue. Just my thought on that. I would love to see those installed everywhere that we're talking. Thank you.
Commissioner Gert.
Thank you, Chairman. I'd just like to add to this conversation, being in New Smyrna, traveling down A1A, we recently, over the last year or two, have implemented a number of crosswalks from 3rd Avenue down A1A, and I travel that every summer. One of my concerns, and I think this is alluding to what Councilwoman Dennis was saying, we have 5 lanes. You've got 2 northbound, 2 southbound. You got a suicide lane, which is or a median, depending on what's
true
at that given time. And when I travel down this road, I'm not so sure that we haven't caused more of a problem by simply putting in a crosswalk. Here's why. I travel down this road. If I'm going southbound on the right lane, there's 4 other lanes plus a sidewalk. You got a group of kids coming off the beach. And I think there's a tremendous misunderstanding of what a crosswalk is. If drivers don't understand it, pedestrians don't understand it, they get to that thing and they think they go. And it's a concern to me because you can have a driver with every intent of wanting to follow the law, do well, stop for the pedestrian. Pedestrians get to those crosswalks and they think that they could just step out in front of traffic. Now, maybe that is the law. It's kind of been a little unclear, but I'm almost seeing accidents on a daily basis. Now, the flashers that Councilwoman Dennis is talking about, where they push a button and at least there's something that notifies both, in this case, northbound and southbound traffic, very important. You got 5 lanes of traffic. And when those kids start on one side, let's say that the northbound traffic is stopping, those kids are looking for the other end. So they come flying across, they start sprinting across that crosswalk, and then the southbound traffic is not understanding that there's kids over here, and I've seen this happen a number of times. So unfortunately, when we had an elderly gentleman going to church one morning, a person under the influence of drugs killed him. We're attempting to do something well, but I'm not so sure that we're not doing it halfway. You know, our intent's there. We want to accomplish. We need crosswalks there. We've got a lot of traffic out there. But things like those emergency flashers, I'm scared that, you know, we're doing it halfway. We're going to end up having a family basically mowed down because people aren't really understanding what they're supposed to be doing in a crosswalk. So I just want to advocate for the flashers, especially when you got 5 lanes. You got 1 lane northbound and southbound. If I'm going down to Ponce Inlet, there's certain areas where it's a lot different. But you've got 5 lanes. People, pedestrians get to these things, and they just start going. So anyway, thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you very much. Next, item D, presentation discussion on the U.S. 92 International Speedway Boulevard Corridor Master Management Plan. And that is being done by...
We have Heather Garcia with Florida Department of Transportation, and she is working with their consultants on the corridor master plan for US 92. It's been underway for quite some time. They've held some public meetings, and they're here to update the TPO on that particular project.
Good morning. Again, I'm Heather Garcia with the Department of Transportation, and I have with me today Martha Moore with Giavi & Associates, here to talk to you about this project. The study purpose was wrapping up the project, but to develop a more comprehensive and up-to-date master plan that included an implementation program to guide and coordinate safety and transit enhancements, congestion management, and economic development along on the US 92 corridor. The limits of the study from the I-4 ramps out to the west to the beach side. Now we did take, although the focus was primarily on the US 92 ISB corridor, we did take a look at activity from the north and the south from Bevel to Mason Avenue, just to see, because there's a, you know, as everyone knows, this is a very dynamic, very changing corridor, lots of tourists, lots of activity. So we wanted to see all the impacts of all this great development that's going on in the area. So that was taken into consideration. And the project, as you can see, is it's 9.3 miles. And with that, I think I'm going to turn it over to Martha to talk a little bit more about our findings and suggestions.
Thank you, Heather. It's nice to be here once talking about something other than long-range plan. As Heather mentioned, I'll go back real quick to that study area map. You can see all the many, many projects that are ongoing in the dynamic Daytona Beach area, not just public, but also private investments. And the first thing that we had to do as part of this corridor master management plan was to get our hands around everything that was going on. So we looked at the ongoing studies that have been done in the recent years, proposed developments. We looked at basic information like accident data, the locations of sidewalks, bike lanes, where we had gaps in that multimodal network, because we really were trying to focus on safety for bicyclists and pedestrians. We looked at lane widths and parking, all the really basic things, so that we could start out with a good base of information. We then worked with a project visioning team made up of shareholders, trying to identify what we needed to do within the corridor. And things that came up frequently were to close the gaps in the sidewalk network, close gaps in the bicycle network. If we could implement the DOT's bigger, better bike lanes, that's a 7-foot buffered bike lanes. And because of the crash history along ISB, particularly in the downtown area near Mainland High School, Bethune-Cookman, Daytona State, be able to include some median refuge so that people could, because they are making those mid-block crossings, be able to have a way they could at least have a place in the center of the road where they could get refuge to cross the street safer. So the initial corridor assessment, what we came up with, some of those recommendations were to include things like a 12-foot shared use pass. We were able to include those in some areas. They'd be buffered from the travel lanes by landscaping, so you would feel a little safer as a cyclist or a walker. Also, where we could, we'd widen the sidewalks. In one area, reduce the speed limit, do some of those raised medians, and also enhance crosswalks and landscaping. This is an example of a typical section for one of our alternatives. We had divided this 9.3-mile corridor into four sections. And this particular section that I'm showing you is from Midway to Clyde Morris Boulevard. On the top is the existing cross-section, and then on the bottom that does show what we had recommended. The red dotted line shows where we've got the bigger bike lanes, the 7-foot buffered bike lanes, closed in the drainage swales right there to a closed drainage system so that we have room to put in that 12-foot shared use path. This is another example, and right out in front of our TPO building, I-95 to Williamson Boulevard, there's a major sidewalk gap right out in front when you're on the north side of ISB and you're trying to get from Indigo Drive over to the other side of west of 95. And so what we were able to identify is a way to cross pedestrians and cyclists to the south side of ISB, where they would be able to then get on the sidewalk in the bike lane and continue to the other side of I-95. So those are some of the recommendations. And also, we continued the buffered bike lanes there on the east end of this segment. Focusing on safety issues, multimodal issues, and also who was going to be funding this, we were able to develop short-term, long-term, mid-term recommendations, and our horizon year goes out to 2035. We identified 131 improvements. Of those, 87 were projects that were already recommended or were lined up to be done. But we also identified 52 other recommendations, again, that we could close that bicycle and sidewalk gaps in the network. We color-coded the recommendations by the funding agency, and then we created maps. And each of the different agencies had its own symbol, whether it was already a funded project or a funded project. And then we, each of the four segments, we bundled the projects together. There's an odd something over there. Okay, thank you. So we bundled the projects together into, logically, you bundle a bunch of smaller projects to go into a bigger project that could be done at the same time. And where we are right now is that we've sent that bundled list, the recommendations, A through G, to our project visioning team. And we're having them vote to see which of the projects they would like to see first, which area improved. And we haven't gotten the results of that back yet, but we should soon. We're going to wrap up the project. This is our final presentation. We've been through all the TPO standing committees. And after today, we're going to go ahead, collect the results of our poll, wrap that project up, and it will be posted to CFL Roads along with all the other information about the project. And Heather?
Any questions?
Who wants to bet that Area G, the East ISB, will come in first place in the voting?
Thank you.
Thank you.
I got two questions for Martha.
Mr. John, why don't you go outside and talk to her? Questions?
No, this is... We discussed that there are places for public participation on an agenda.
Public comment, sir.
No, on an agenda item. The two questions are, East ISB, from the bridge to the beach, is there any recommendations for there? I mean, she can give that to me later. I don't care about it now. And number two, the study that she did on circles, why isn't it implemented into this or bundled into this plan? Thank you very much.
Any other questions? All right, thank you very much. Next up, item E, the FDOT report, Mr. Ferguson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick update. The 415 from Seminole County line to Reed Ellis is on track for spring of next year. The I-4 from State Road 44 to I-95, this is set up to be complete in summer of next year. Then there is the US 92 Pet Bridge and associated pedestrian improvements. This is estimated to be completed this spring. Moving on down the list, we have your system interchange, 995, I-4, US 92. This project is showing as being complete sometime in the spring of 2018. Then finally, to complete the bigger projects, the US 92 to Mocha Farms to Beach Street. These are adaptive signal controls to facilitate traffic movement. We expect those to be done later this calendar year. Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you. Item Roman numeral 7, Executive Director's Report. Lois?
Just quickly to let you know that on the connector study from I-95 to 417, we continue to work with the Florida Turnpike Enterprise. We've received a draft scope of services that they would use or are proposing to access the funding that's available, and they will be looking to the TPO to do public outreach as a part of that. So we continue to coordinate that with Florida Turnpike. We have our annual retreat scheduled for February 5th of 2016. We're going to be focusing on technology and transportation. There is a tremendous amount of activity going on, especially in the state of Florida, and so we're going to start to explore what some of those issues are, what the time frames might look like, and how they may or may not impact some of the decisions that we make. We'll be bringing back some additional LRTP work on your agenda next month. Just as a reminder, we approve the project lists and the summary reports, but there is a lot more detail that goes into a transportation plan, and so we'll be coming back and bringing some more material to you in November. And then lastly, we did have on October 15th, the DOT held a work program public hearing, which sets up the tentative work program, and they'll be coming back and giving a full presentation to our committees and board next month on the November agendas. You do have before you a letter that I had sent to them in response to the materials that were handed out and the information. And I just want to clarify the concern that was expressed over seawalls and Flagler Beach. There is a project that has been worked out by Flagler, so it doesn't appear as though they're putting in something that Flagler Beach is opposed to. But again, we didn't quite have all of the details by the time the response for comments, or the deadline for responses was required. So I just wanted to make sure that DOT was coordinating closely with local governments on those projects. And that's all I have for my report today.
Okay, board member comments. Commissioner Gilligan?
Yeah. There's an article in the paper a couple weeks ago about talking about this proposed half-cent sales tax for transportation projects. You know, our Daytona's been pretty involved with this conversation, and I think the article did a little bit of a misjustice to the process. I think that what the question is the funding formula of how money would be divided, not whether or not a half-cent sales tax is a good idea. So my understanding is when the cities are pushing back, and I can tell you where this is Daytona's case, we're pushing back because we want to have a say in the formula that's used to figure out how to divide the money. The proposal that was put out by the county manager in a very sort of vague term really was not very it wasn't something we were too happy with. And, you know, we want to make sure that if we get everybody at the table and have a conversation and come up with something that's fair, I think that it's going to move forward. The idea of doing a study, I don't think anybody thinks a study needs to be done. We just all need to be in agreement about how that money gets divided up, you know, if it were to move forward on as a ballot initiative.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
If you don't mind, I'd like to support exactly what he's saying. We were done a disservice by some of the reporting on that. We started that years ago in discussions of the West Volusia, the mayor's group over there with county council members, and I wish Josh was here because that's how all of us got together over on the west side, talked about this and proposed this. We have no problem. We don't feel a study's needed. Each city can promote its own and sell their citizens on the issue, and then the voters decide. But there has to be an allocation of funding, some mechanism, so we know what we can promote in our cities. We don't need a $100,000, $150,000 study, as Mr. Dineen proposed, because we're the ones that are going to try to convince our residents to vote for this process, but we can't identify projects if we don't have an idea of the split of the funds. Well, and the suggestion was always give the largest portion to take care of the down the roads, you know, SunRail costs, VOTRAN upgrades. Many of the cities want additional VOTRAN. We were all in favor of giving shares to that. I mean, I'm talking just about Deltona now, but the West Volusia group was always in favor of that. We just wanted to balance that money, divvied up in a matter or formula to be determined before we go forward with the vote. And the intent of Mr. Dineen, I think his intent was to put the money in the pot and then compete for it, and that's what we couldn't. That's what we didn't want any part of. So the study we're not in favor of, so we needed it, and the distribution of funds could be argued out or discussed or debated out before we move forward.
Well, I think in defense of this, not the study, but the fact is it wasn't Jim Dineen's idea to do the study. That came out of the transportation group in the meeting when they had that person, and that's where that number came out. It came back to us, and we felt, the council, that if a study was going to be done, we were willing to put up half of the cost. Everybody assumed that automatically this thing was going through. It was a suggestion to the council. We felt, okay, if there's going to be a study, we will pay the half of the cost. That was the only reason. It never went any further than that. Then everybody kind of jumped on this, and it became a little bit of a food fight there. And I think there's been some people who have problems with the county manager, so they decided to hang this around his neck and set it on fire. And I think it's been a little unfair to the county manager on that issue. We felt, the council, and that maybe the best thing to do was, if the cities wanted to pursue this, we would step back and let them decide on how they wanted to proceed and how the distribution would be. The thinking being that if you start saying this city gets this much, this city gets this much, it comes down to where the smaller cities are going to get burned and they're going to say, well, what in the world do we want anything to do with this? That's why there was a thought of a series of projects that everybody agreed on and then fund those projects with that money. SunRail was on there. I've got some people that are violently opposed to any money going to SunRail. I got people who are violently opposed to any money going to Votrans. So, I mean, it needs to have a discussion on that with everybody just sitting down and having a calm discussion about what it is and going from there. So I had suggested with Lois that maybe the TPO would take some kind of a role in this. But, you know, it's up to the group here what we do or what y'all want to do. Commissioner Bowers?
Thank you. Since there's a couple comments on this, I thought I'd just chime in. I mean, I agree with Commissioner Gilliland that the article did a disservice. I think it glossed over what are a very delicate set of circumstances and issues and just contributed to negative discussion rather than the positives. As far as Ormond Beach, I mean, I read the article, and to us, the item that came to us was about a survey, and frankly, we just didn't think a survey was necessary because it's just is needed in terms of the road and infrastructure improvements throughout the county. So ours was very limited in our response. In fact, I think we ended up sending a letter saying we support the need for additional infrastructure and improvements throughout the county. Yet it was kind of cast as if we were thrown in with everything else in that article. So I just thought I'd probably clarify that, which has probably been done through other circles. But thank you.
Okay. All right. Anything else? Roman numeral 9, information items, you see that. Lois, we're showing a meeting for November 25th, which is the day before Thanksgiving. Can we change the date of that? Is that... Or do we have to have a meeting in November?
That is always the option of this group. I think there are enough activities and agenda items that we aren't going to be able to cancel a meeting. This issue was brought up. It was discussed by the executive committee. This has been the case for the last several years since we changed from a Tuesday to a Wednesday. We have made quorum each year, but it's certainly at the discretion of this board if there is a desire to change that meeting date.
Would Tuesday, the 2 days before Thanksgiving, be better for everybody?
It's going to take a survey of the whole board to try and negotiate a new date. And honestly, I think we tried that 1 year, and it didn't work out very well. So we did this last year, and we had a quorum. I propose we just stick with it. I think we'll get a quorum.
Again. Okay.
Yeah, all right. The last 2 years have been 2 years. On that day.
All right. Yes, Commissioner.
And that might be a time if you can't make it. I know some of the cities don't have an alternate made. It has to be a formal request by letter. You can't just send somebody here as your alternate. So it might be a good time to think about it. If you can't make that meeting, get with Pam on what you need to do to make your own formal alternate and fill them in.
Thank you.
She's ready for whoever shows up.
Okay. Any other business to come before us? Seeing none, we are adjourned.